Today on Coding 101, oh my glob, we're talking about some Perl get form.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, honest, and easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter the promo code C1017. Welcome to Coding 101. It's the Twitch show where we let you into the world of the code monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I am Shannon Morris. And for the next 30 minutes, we are going to get you all learned it up and everything you need to know to be a Perl code warrior.
That's right. Now, we thankfully got past regex. We put regular expressions
finally
in the back. People were figuring it out. And we got to something really, really practical and really, really useful. And that
we
is
did.
How do you dynamically generate web pages with Perl? Very useful.
So there is a lot more advanced information about this other than just knowing Perl code. You also have to know how to set up your own web hosting. You have to make sure that it accepts Perl code and that it translates correctly to the client whenever they open up your web page.
One of the things that people were asking, well, how come we didn't show people what CGI was and how do you set up your web? It's going to differ depending on which hosting provider you use.
Yeah.
In fact, we had a very nice demo all set up, and our hosting provider took a dump about 20 minutes ago. Thank you, One in One. You took a very wonderful demonstration and just kind of ripped it apart. But yes, I mean, yeah, you're going to have to do a little bit of extra work to get these scripts running, but I'm sure any hosting provider will have a detailed FAQ on how you get CGI working on your site.
So, what do you say? Let's get started with some snubs compiled.
I like that. I'm big on compiled.
So first off, I wanted to show you our Google Plus community viewer submission. So this one is from Joe. I pulled it up over here. And this is over in Google Plus. It's plus.google.com/twitcoding101 if you want to join. He just decided to send over a dynamic web page that uses regular expressions to determine which browser you have. So he already linked us to his example, so we didn't have to put it on our own web hosting service. And it just says, what browser are you using? Welcome, local server, and then you appear to be using Chrome. Now, if I hit view source right here, you will see that all we see is the HTML.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also sent us the code. So if I open up his code right here, and I'll maximize that. There we go. Okay, so you can see that he has Perl code in here. He tells it that it is going to be HTML. And then you scroll down and you see that it tries to figure out what kind of browser that you're running. Now, of course, this is a little bit advanced. He's using this $agent thing right here.
Right, right.
And then he just closes it out with /body/HTML.
Right. But this is actually a really good example of server-side scripting versus client-side scripting. Because if it was client-side scripted, you'd actually see the code in the page displayed in your browser.
Exactly.
Instead, you see what runs on the server, not is the final product that gets delivered to your browser.
And it works!
It
Yay!
Works.
So thank you, Joe, for sending that over. And I also had an example for you as well. And let me go find this real quick. Here's my code. And where did I put it? I think it's over here. Aha, here we go. Okay, so in my example, all it says is welcome to Coding 101. Watch our show at this page. And you can click on the page and it goes to our TWiT Coding 101 website. Now, if I view source for this, all you see again is just the HTML.
Just
so
the
I wrote
link.
Out welcome to Coding 101 and I made a little href link right here for Coding 101, this page, and then a couple of different font types. I guess I could have added a little bracket right here to make it enter onto a new line.
Right, if you wanted to.
BR, yay, and then /body/HTML. Now, if I go into my code as well, and I think I pulled it up right here. Yeah. So very, very simple code. Perl code, content type is text HTML, and then we have down here the actual HTML.
Right.
Ta-da!
And again, a really good description, a really good example of server-side versus client-side scripting. This is one of the things that we tried to drill into the audience in the last episode, and that is, if it's going to be client-side, more likely than not, you'll see the actual scripting code inside the browser.
Exactly.
That means it's executing on your computer. In your example, we needed to have a server that was set up properly, which is why it was horrible that 101 decided to die.
We ended up putting it on one of Patrick's servers.
Yeah, we had to drop it on Patrick's. But it gets executed on the remote side, and all you get is the finished product. And of course, you should be able to see the pros and the cons of doing it either way. If it's on the client computer, you have access to more things than you would if it's server side.
That's true.
But if it's server side, it also means you typically have a bit more security because they don't have to see any of the scripting code. They just see the finished product.
And if you guys are confused about this, watch last week's episode of Coding 101. Patrick showed us examples of both with HTML as well as just with Perl code. So you can see the differences in the sources.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, we are going to be getting into forms. Now, forms in HTML, they've been around since HTML has been around.
Yay.
And normally they're kind of ugly, right? You know,
that's true.
Type this and hit this. But forms are one of those basic ways to get information from the user. Just like we would have user input inside of an actual compiled program on your computer.
You see forms on any site you go to these days.
Exactly. It's a basic part of coding for the web. However, we can combine forms from HTML with a few things in Perl to give us dynamically generated pages depending on what a user has inputted.
Oh, really?
We're going to show you how to do that, but first, let's take a break because I want to talk a little bit about, domain hosting.
Well, I think we have a pretty good one that you could check out.
We do. We've got a vendor here. We have a sponsor of Coding 101 that has been around 4 years. In fact, their name is almost synonymous with the early web. And that's Hover. Now, you may say, well, Padre, I don't remember Hover, but you do remember 2Cows. 2Cows was one of those repositories, one of those sources of data, of information that, grew up with the web. Now, when you have a great idea, you want to secure a domain name for it. You want something catchy and something memorable to represent your online identity. Well, Hover gives you exactly what you need to get that job done. You'll find the perfect domain for your idea so that you can get started working on it right away. Now, right now, Hover is having a sale on all new domain extensions through September 1st. The sale is for new and existing customers. Summer is the perfect time to start a new project, and every single new domain is deeply discounted with Hover, so you can choose whatever you'd like, .club, .ninja, .guru, just about anything. Now, people love Hover, geeks, developers, designers, and programmers, because they know that they'll have the best tools and support for their domains. But you don't have to be an expert to get a domain. The service is really simple enough. Now, Hover takes all of the hassle and the friction out of registering your domain. It gives you an easy-to-use, powerful interface to manage your domain so that anyone can do it. You can get the perfect domain name and start building your web presence right away. All you have to do is search for a few keywords, and Hover will show you the best available options and suggestions. In fact, right now, Hover is a clean and simple website, and what you can see Brian doing is just scanning through some domains that he may want for his nom de plume as the Cranky Hippo. Now, in less than 5 minutes, you can find the domain that you want and get it up and running. That's what they're all about. They also offer a valet transfer service to make the process painless. For free, Hover will take care of the entire process of transferring your domain and let you know when your domains are settled in your Hover account. They'll transfer all those DNS settings. No matter how many domain names you have, it's no additional cost. So if you're just fed up with your domain host right now, your domain registrar, use Hover. They'll take care of all that back-end stuff and get you to your domain bliss. Now, here's the big thing for me. Hover is honest. They don't believe in heavy-handed upselling. They include everything you need with your domain, no more and no less. They also include a custom email. You'll get a smart control panel so that you can do what you want with your domains, plus Whois privacy is included free on every domain that supports it. Now, if you ever need it, Hover has the best customer support around. It's known for its no-wait, no-hold, no-transfer phone service. Now, when you call, a real person is ready to help. And right now, they are offering you volume discounts. They'll give you a discount on your domain renewals, starting at just 10 domains, and then going up in value from there. The idea is, the more domains you have in your account, the less you have to pay to renew them. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to visit Hover today to register your domain. And for 10% off your first purchase, take advantage of their summer sale by going to hover.com and using our promo code C 1017. We thank Hover for their support of Coding 101. Now, Shannon, I want to talk a little bit about Get.
Get?
Get.
I know some Get.
Get.
Well, mine's more Linux.
Got.
Linux-y.
it's a little Linux-y. Okay. So when we talk about forms, we're basically going to be talking about stuff like this. If you go ahead and switch over to my computer, in fact, let me change the format here so that it's not so small, because I know have really bad eyes. There we go. So this is like its most simple form, what a form looks like in HTML, right?
I remember doing this in the 90s.
Yeah, you got your opening and your closing HTML and body tags, and then form. So it's just another HTML command.
There's an
form,
action in there.
Method, get, action. And then you have the input name and the input type. That gives you a button, right? Well, we're going to show you exactly what goes into that. Now, Brian, if you come back to me. When we talk about HTML forms, we're really talking about two different possibilities of getting information from the user. One is called a get.
And the second one is post.
Post, exactly. Yeah. We're only going to be talking about get today. So we're going to limit it to get. Next week, we'll talk a little bit about post, because they're different. They kind of interchange a lot of the characteristics, but the main thing to remember about get is all it does is it takes whatever the user has entered and appends it to the URL, the uniform.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It sounds pretty simple.
Really simple. So, for example, if you're using a get on a form, and inside of its little action item, you've got the URL, the textop.net. It's going to add to the end of the textop.net whatever the user has entered, and that gives you a new URL.
Easy. Okay.
Really easy. Yeah, we'll show you why you'd want to do that, but it's a very specific type, and it's very useful. Now, what we want to do is we want to use get to somehow get data from the user, from a form, and then push it through Perl so that Perl can do whatever you want Perl to do with
it. So this is where Perl comes into play.
This is where Perl can do some dynamically generated web page magic.
Ooh. Okay. Now, how does it do that?
Let me show you how this works. So let's, for example, we're going to go back to my computer. This right here, this web page is actually the result of this code. So this code has generated that. Okay. So very simple.
Yes.
All it does is I've got name, question mark, and then I've got a button below it. And if I go to the browser, name, question mark, and the button below it. So it's, let's say this is the name of the bunny. So I'm going to put Roger. Roger is the name of my bunny. And I click submit. Watch the address bar right here. Okay, it's giving me an error because the page doesn't exist.
Bunny name.
But see, it just appended question mark bunny name equals Roger.
Right.
Now think back. I know you're on the web a lot. You've probably seen addresses like this.
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime you do like a search.
Yes.
It just appends it to the end of the URL, right?
And I've noticed if you just delete that ending after the question mark, you can just get back to
it. It just goes right back to the beginning, right? Yeah. That's a get. That's what it's done. So let me see. I think YouTube does that. Well, not really. Let's do Google. So Google does that. So if I'm searching for something, and let's say I'm searching for snubs.
Snubs.
See, it did something. It appended to the end of that URL.
Yeah, it did.
My search term, right?
Cool.
So this is just a version of that. This is all it means. It means I'm going to take whatever the user has inputted and I'm going to drop it onto the end of the URL. Now,
exactly.
You're probably asking yourself, but Padre, what use is that?
Yeah. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, it's just
so far.
Stupid. I mean, so it's got to.
You're going to make your own search site?
Well, maybe you are. That's what we're going to be trying to do. We're going to show you how you could take that new URL that you've used, get on a form in order to create, run it through Perl, and then make it do something magical.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I want to see some magic.
I do. I do, too. But in order for us to do this magic, I think we need to bring in our code warrior.
Oh, boy. I'm ready.
So if you could hook up that satellite, Brian, I believe we're now going to bring in Mr. Patrick Delahanty from TwitTV, our code warrior. Patrick, thank you for coming back.
Oh, my pleasure. Coming here from the Starship orbiting the Earth, Twit Friendship Satellite.
It's been a very, very long
with the
journey.
The warp drive back there.
Yes, but the warp drive. Now, Patrick, so, I mean, get and post on forms in HTML, it's not exactly advanced. I mean, you can look at a form primer and you'll know how to make a form within, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But...
Whoa.
That was kind of cool.
That was part of the satellite beam.
Okay.
That was different.
Apologies from the desk.
Technical
the
difficulties.
Operators.
But now that, Patrick, now that we've got this really weird looking URL, what do we do with it?
Well, now that you can pass data from an HTML form to a script, the script is able to use that input, just like we were able to do back in the first couple episodes of this module, where we used standard input, except now we're submitting the data through a form instead of just, you know, typing
it. Coding it in,
right? Yeah. So similarly, it's still treating it as input just from a form instead of standard input from a user.
Yeah, yeah, it's coming from a different source. That's the only
cool.
difference.
Okay.
And then we're outputting it to a web page instead of just the command line.
Right.
Yay.
But this is what you have to do, right? Because, I mean, people running your Perl script aren't going to have your command line in front of them on their computers.
Yes, exactly.
They're going to have that form. So that form is like the standard input. When we start playing with Perl, this is standard input, but over the web. And it's going to add it to the end of the URL so that when it runs the Perl script goes, oh, there's my input. Take my input, run it through my code.
Got it.
My
That's cool.
All right, Patrick, show us how it works.
All right. Now, remember, we're not here to tell you how to do HTML. That's not even programming, really. It's
Careful.
HTML.
Oh,
it's markup.
Come on.
It's
You're
going to
piss off a lot of people, Patrick.
It's markup. So we're here to look at the Perl part of this. So I've just kept a very simple form. It's asking, what is your favorite animal? And I think I did this in week 2, where we had the command line.
Yes, you did.
And so here's the HTML code for this form. It's just get one input and then a submit button. And you can see I'm submitting the form element here, the input type, it's text, and the name is animal.
Right. Now, Patrick, one of the important parts, if you go ahead and blow up that screen a little bit, Brian, we want to see his code. The action part, that's what the form's going to do when you push that button. The action
yes.
is to call the URL cgi-bin-c101 app26a.pl.
So it's calling that Perl code.
It's calling yep. that, exactly. That particular script, episode26a.pl. But it's going to append, after that question mark, everything that the user put into the form.
Yes. And it ends in .pl. That's what we're used to for Perl. You could also do .cgi.
Right.
Some different hosts have different requirements. Some want it to be certain ways.
Right.
You might have to make it executable.
Which, again, is why we didn't show you how to do that, because it's probably going to be wrong. You have to find out how your provider does it.
Yeah, but these are just a few common things that you might have to check out. So I thought I'd mention them. So anyway, we've got this form, and here's what it looks like. What's your favorite animal? Of course, I'm going to enter bunny. You can see I've typed that before. Submit. And this is example A's result. Query string says animal equals bunny. You said bunny. Yes, bunnies are the best.
Oh,
this is
cool.
The same program we had before. I just made it work on the web.
Exactly.
I know, Brian, if you go up a little higher here, we see the URL, which I'm running my local MAME server again. But we've got cgi bin, c101, episode26a.pl. This is exactly the action where I told it to go. It's got the question mark, animal equals bunny.
Right. It's got the name of the input, and then it's got the input itself.
So if I look at the code for this, we'll go over here. I've got...
So this is the example 26A code?
Yes.
Okay.
So it starts off, it's got Perl. We set the content type to HTML, and then I just do an HTML header. This is nothing but setting the title of the page and the big coding 101 text and the header text. But here's the meat of the program. We've got...
Wow, there's a lot in there.
Yeah. We've got the query, and that's just setting query string equal to this variable, so I don't have to type out query string every time because it's long. Then I just print it out so I can show what that value is, where it printed out your query string says, and it said animal equals bunny.
So query is the input from the user?
Yes. This for what I entered, it says animal equals bunny.
Okay.
And so what I did here, I looked at the length of the query string to make sure it's larger than 0, to make sure something was entered. And if it is, I do this split on an ampersand. And what I'm doing is I'm splitting it so that every variable becomes a different entry into this array. And then for each item in the array, I assign the name, which would be animal, and the value, bunny, and it splits on the equals.
Oh, that's cool.
And then... Here, I just kind of normalized value.
Right. So just for the folks at home, what Patrick has done is, remember, when it appends it to that URL, it's calling that particular script, so episode 26A, that script, and then it's handing it that entire chunk. So the name of the action, and then what
animal.
Was, and then which
and
in this case it
was
animal
was bunny.
Equals bunny. But that's just coming in as a single string.
Right.
It's not like it's got two pieces of data. It's got one piece of data.
So you have to split it up, because if you didn't, the entire value would be animal equals
bunny.
Horse. Animal equals bunny.
Exactly.
Whatever.
Which is what his code does. So that first part of the code, the first thing he does is he assigns everything to that variable called query.
Array for arrays.
Yeah. And then he breaks it apart. And he wants to break it apart so that he can manipulate it better. He can manipulate the name apart from the value.
That makes sense.
Yes. And so I did this. And this will be apparent in my next example of why I went through all this. But then it just says, okay, if this in animal, which is the value I set, if it exists, then just set animal equals then this value, just because I don't want to type all those brackets over and over. But if it's not there, then I tell animal equals nothing. So I haven't entered anything. It's nothing. And then it's the same script we had back in, I think, the third episode.
Yes.
Where it's, if animal contains bunny or animal contains rabbit, then print out, you said animal. Yes, bunnies are the best.
So you basically just took your code and copied and pasted it in here.
Exactly. This is the same code. So this is nothing new in here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Once I've got the input, I can do whatever I want with it. It's just, so what I'm showing here is how to get the input. And then this just ends with end of HTML, and I have a convenient link back so I can resubmit again and again.
Right. We've got Dr. Morbius in the chat room who's saying, well, he's having difficulty figuring out, well, where's the print statement? How does it know where to print? All it's doing is it's printing an HTML file. That's what the script will do. It's printing an HTML file that will go to your browser. So it's just HTML. If you know how to do HTML, you know how to do the print statement out of Perl for dynamically generated web pages.
Yeah.
Now, the other interesting thing about Patrick's code here is that if you remember from our lessons from C# and from Python, there was always a way to call a function or to call a method, and you passed it a couple of variables, right?
Yes.
Because otherwise it would just do the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
That's essentially what we're doing. This is a way to pass the script a piece of data from the user that can be anything that the user wants it to be and have it process that particular piece of data.
Makes sense.
Yeah. If you start putting... this is one of the things that we wanted people to start doing after a couple of modules, which is you can overlay the languages on top of each other. And even though the syntax may look different...
That's crazy.
The ideas are going to be the same.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of my coding friends be able to do that, put, you know, different languages all in the same line of code.
Yeah.
And it totally confused me. I figured it would give you all sorts of errors, but it works in some cases.
Yeah, once you get a grasp of how programming languages work, all you need are a couple of reference sheets so that you go, oh, that's how I write it in C. This is how I write it in Python. This is how I write it in Perl. And boom, you're golden. All right, Patrick, you've got more for us.
Yes. Now, keep in mind, there's a million different ways to do things in Perl. So the way I'm doing it here... I'm not using a Perl module because that we'll talk about that later. But I wanted to show exactly how this works. So in my second example, I've got two input fields, favorite animal, and you get to name this animal, which I know everybody wants to do. So we'll say it is a cat.
Luna.
Schrodinger.
Oh, that
and,
poor cat.
So we'll submit that. And I print the query string again. And I said, you said cat. Okay, whatever. I hope Schrodinger brings you joy anyway.
Aw, that's cute.
So if we look at my script for that over here.
Which you wrote this before. It's just, yes. This is just a regular expression exercise.
And so everything up here is exactly the same. I'm still getting the input from the query string. I'm separating it into different values. And here, you can see I have the same, if it's animal, then set that. And then I did if name... So I just have a second field. If I've entered name, set it to that. If I haven't, it's unknown. So if I left that field blank, it would come back and unknown. And then it prints out the values down below. So it's just another field to look for in the URL. And if we look at the URL up in the top of the browser here, we can see it has animal equals cat and name equals Schrodinger.
And so it appended both of the form answers at
the end. Yes, and it puts the ampersand between everything.
Yeah. And you can get really, really long. I mean, you've seen those URLs that just seem to go on forever. That's because they're appending all the data that has to get pushed to the scripting code.
So, theoretically, I could change the cat's name here to Luna right in the command line without even submitting the form.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so it's changed here.
Yeah. Because remember,
all the get
function did was it appended the data that the user entered into our URL. So you could just change the URL and bypass the form altogether.
I think I just figured out how to bypass. There's a coupon printer thing that only lets you do like two per username.
Yeah. So. By the way, what we're doing right now is pretty much what people do when they start testing
Hacks.
Databases for a SQL injection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome.
If you see a SQL database, it's got a really long URL.
Yeah.
People can just start pushing values into that string to see if the URL, if the SQL server falls over.
That's
awesome. If this form had hidden fields, you could change them easily, but just changing the URL, even if it's not available, apparent in the form, you could just...
Which, by the way, we're not doing it right now because we don't have the time, but this would be a really good place to sanitize your inputs because you need to make sure that someone didn't say, the name of my bunny is Drop Tables, because that would be bad.
Yeah, and I'm trying to provide easy examples that just show the basics. And really, if I was doing this, I would have all sorts of error checking, like, oh, you didn't actually enter something here. Or, you entered this invalid value that has pluses and semicolons and everything, which... just trying to keep it simple for these examples.
Right. Now, what I really like about this, Patrick, is if people are freaking out, if they're looking at your code going, this is too difficult, go back to episodes 2 through 4, because this is just a rehash of code he's already shown you. So if you were able to understand episodes 2 and 4, this is just taking that code and wrapping it around, wrapping it with a piece of script that allows it to work on the web. That's all it is.
We got a pretty interesting one down here from Esol. He said, this is why you want to use post instead of get. But
Esol,
post isn't safe either.
Stop cheating. And we're not getting to post till next week. But it's not like, post makes all the problems go away. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. It really does. It's just as vulnerable. It's just a little harder.
All right, Patrick, what else you got?
One more example. And this one, I took the same thing. I added a few more fields. But here we've got checkboxes and radio buttons. So if you want to see how this happens, well, favorite animal, I'm going to say...
This looks like one of those trivia pages.
Hippo.
In the 90s.
Animal's name is Brian. What does the animal eat? Vegetables, meat. Not so much seeds. We'll say hay. Is this animal cute?
Is there an entry for steam buns?
I could have put steam buns in this form. And this is just the HTML over here. We've got... just checkbox and radio.
Yeah.
You can see the value is food for all four of these and cute for these two. So there's going to be something interesting that happens here when we submit. You can see the query string has
look at that URL,
food,
Brian.
food, and one value of cute.
That's cool.
So it said, you said hippo eats hay. Okay, whatever. I hope Brian brings you joy anyway. At least Brian is cute.
Aw.
Woohoo.
And so if we look at the code for this, I kept everything the same. Go down here. I've got animal name, but then I have the if food, it eats, and then I print the name. But because hay was the last one checked, it's the last one in the order, the way I've got this set up, it's only doing that. So if I was doing this for a legitimate program, I would have to go through and make sure I get every value of hay in the URL.
Right.
And so that would need a for loop and more stuff. But in this code, I had assigned name and animal up above, but down here I'm just calling these variables directly without reassigning them. Just if it's cute, say this. If it's not, then say, what do you mean isn't... And it's doing more down here. So Yeah, we'll have this this code up in
lame.
Yeah, we'll have this code up on our GitHub.
It'll be in the GitHub, so everybody can look at it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now, Patrick, we've only got two episodes left, and I know next week we're going to be dealing with posts because we got to figure out the other way to pull data in.
I can't wait for that.
I'm wondering if, because we do believe this, we've always said that we believe you should sanitize your input, should we show them at least a rudimentary way that they could sanitize the inputs being coming off of forms?
Yeah, I think we can do that. And it would be a good time to do that. And regular expressions come in really handy for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we can show them how to hack the forum if it wasn't.
Exactly. Well, right now, actually, I think that's the homework. The homework is figure out what sites out there are sanitizing their inputs. Report back. No, don't do that. If we tell you to do that, we'll get in trouble. No, but there are a lot of sites out there that are not sanitizing those inputs. They have really crappy forms hitting a SQL database, and you're like, I could just type anything in here, and the SQL database will take it. That's essentially what's happening, and that's what we're going to try to teach you not to let happen.
I have a form I need to check.
Hacks.
Not going to tell you guys where it is.
Hacks. Lots of hacks.
Poops.com.
but Patrick, okay, of course, we're going to be covering more forms next week with Post, but I want to thank you very much for being our code warrior again. Can you tell the folks where they can find you?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm at pdelahanty. And also check out my website, chibiproject.com. I mentioned it last week, but we have a brand new episode where we take a Dremel to a Game Boy.
Woohoo!
Oh, stop so, that! Man,
that's what we do.
Childhood.
We destroy stuff.
That's awesome.
That's the whole thing. And that was actually recorded like 2 years ago, but finally posted it.
Oh, my God.
Chibi Project destroying everything I loved in my childhood. Chibi. Oh, no, actually, thank you, Patrick.
Oh, my pleasure.
We love you. And thanks for opening our eyes to something that I think a lot of us take for granted. You know, when we think about forms, we just think type it in, hit submit. Once you understand actually what's happening in the background, I think you get a bit more respect for what the programmers had to do to make that happen. Again, that's Patrick Delahanty, our code warrior. We salute you, sir.
Oh, Mr. Monday, no. Coding 101 is not canceled.
No.
Two episodes left for the module.
We changed
modules. We do 8 episodes per module, per coding language. So we did 8 of C#, 8 of Python, and then 8 of Perl. In between each one of those, we have 2 episodes where we do a couple of really cool interviews.
Which, by the way, I think we've finally got those lined up.
I think I know one.
Yes, unless we have a fall through, we believe we're getting a representative from Google for Go. So
you'll
be able to talk about Go and all the cool things about that language. And the other one, I think you know.
I think I do.
Yeah,
Mr. Darren Kitchen.
Maybe Darren Kitchen is going to come on and tell us a little
Five?
something.
No, kind of familiar.
Maybe some of the blacker side of programming.
I better sanitize that input right now.
Seriously, you better. Now, we know that this is a lot of information for you to take in, and you're not going to be able to get it on the first pass. So if you want to find our episodes in any way, shape, or form, any possible format that you want, you can always find it on our show notes page, which is twit.tv/code or twit.tv/coding101. Either way will get you there.
Make sure to check out the GitHub link in each of the episode's show notes. That is where you can find the code for each and every episode. Also, make sure to follow us over on iTunes. You can just search for Coding 101 in the iTunes podcast area, and you can find us there. Please subscribe. Let all your friends know about it. Tell them to subscribe, too.
Yeah.
And download the show every week.
Yes. And I know that in the past we've been telling you to go to gplus.to/... Twit Coding 101. That's not working right now, so
We do have the new Google Plus, the legit Google Plus link. It's plus.google.com/twitcoding101.
Absolutely.
You can go over there, join our awesome community. We check it out every single week to see what you guys are up to, and thank you so much for sharing your coding examples with us, too. We love showing those off on the show.
Yeah, and don't forget to push them in there, because Shannon pulls from that community to find examples for each and every single episode.
They're also really helpful for me, too, whenever I'm learning about this stuff.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, it doesn't matter what level you are. You can be beginner, advanced, or expert. That's a great community to be a part part of, because if you're an expert, you can impart your knowledge on the people who are growing in the coding world. And if you're a noob, you get to reach out to people who have been doing this for years and years and years. It's a win. It's a win-win for everyone.
It's true. Very true. Also, we're on YouTube, aren't we?
Yeah, you can find us at youtube.com/twitcoding101. We understand that most of the people actually watch the show on the download from the RSS feeds. That's cool. But if you want to catch it on YouTube, we offer it because, hey, we loves you. Now, Google properties aren't the only place that you could find us. You can also find us on Twitter. At least I'm on Twitter. I'm at PadreSJ.
And I'm at Snubs.
Yeah, yeah. And don't forget that if you're gonna be joining us, why not join us live? This is like real.
We're doing live,
yeah. Every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time, you can find us at live.twit.tv. And as long as you're watching us live, jump into the chat room. You see us grab questions from the chat room because our chat room is filled with some really, really bright people,
yes,
including T. Joe Code for Sale LLC. He's been a longtime member of the community since day one, actually. In fact, he was one of the people who was asking Leo for a coding show. We're trying to set up something with him where we're going to have him come in and do two guest coding episodes. It's awesome. Make sure you join us at irc.twit.tv. Until next time, I think we're about done, right?
I think we are. I'm Shannon Morse.
I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
End of line.
Bunny. Oh.
Oh, my God. Look at them bunnies.
Bunnies have the lumps. Oh.